Comic Timing
is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network,
bitch.
Print it.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to the Comic Timing Extra Point, Episode 4. First one of these I've done since April, but it's been a busy couple of weeks / months for me. A lot of late nights at work with actual work to do, but tonight got a little bit of a downtime for about an hour, so I figured why not pump one of these out. And there's a lot to talk about, both in the world of comics and my life and what I've been watching of late. But I'll actually start things off with a little bit of a convention review. This last weekend, the days of the 7th through the 9th of June, was Anime Next at the Garden State Exhibit Center in Somerset, New Jersey, right outside of New Brunswick. I was only there for the Saturday and the Sunday. This is the first time I've done that. Usually I'm there for the full weekend. But last year, kind of really wasn't much for me to do on the Friday. A lot of the friends I used to hang out with have decided to skip Anime Next the last couple of years, and we figured we'd do an experiment this time around and only do 2 days. So Chris, my girlfriend, and I went on to New Jersey Transit at about 9 in the morning and took the hour-long trip over to the New Brunswick station and in New Jersey. And here's the problem with Anime Next, and I brought this up before on Comic Timing. There is no straight shoot to the Garden State Exhibit Center. So unless you have a car, you're not going directly there. And that is really a pain in the ass, because I don't have a car. I don't drive. I'm from New York City. What that entails is that, well, it's hard enough to get a parking space in New York, so I never really got around to it. I have a learner's permit, so I can't even go get the rent a car or whatever, so we're stuck doing that. But luckily, we had a friend of ours, Mr. Brian Price, who runs a bunch of panels at Anime Next, pick us up at the New Brunswick train station and take us over there. Stopped for a little Taco Bell. I had my first Doritos tacos, both the Cool Ranch and the Nacho Cheese. This is the first time I'd had a taco from Taco Bell in like 10 years, because I'm not much of a fast food guy, but I got to admit, they were pretty damn tasty. Not something I do every now, every single week or whatever, but every few months, I could certainly lay myself down and eat some cheesy tacos. Would you even call them cheesy? Oh, whatever. Either way, I had that, and then we headed over to the convention center. Got there around 11, and our first panel was at 1, so we checked into the hotel and then walked on over. Here is issue number 2 with the Garden State Exhibit Center. There is no traffic light when you are crossing the street to get to the Garden State Exhibit Center from the Holiday Inn, which is where we were staying. They had a crossing guard posted there for about 3 or 4 hours, and that's really it. So you're crossing a busy road, hoping that the people are actually going to stop in their cars and not run your ass over when you're going from one side of the street to the other. Reason number 400 that I hate New Jersey. Not really my cup of tea, you know? And yes, I know that there are parts of New Jersey that are not so rural where they'll actually have sidewalks, but you want to talk about weird. There are sidewalks that lead to absolutely nowhere on the walk from the Garden State Exhibit Center over to the DoubleTree Hotel, which is attached to it, and no rhyme or reason to it whatsoever. I will never understand why they put these things where they did. And like I said, there is no sidewalk from the Holiday Inn, which is across the street, to the Garden State Exhibit Center. No traffic light, whatever. So you're running for your damn life. And the same can be said for walking through the parking lot of the Garden State Exhibit Center to get to the DoubleTree, which is further down the road. You can cut across grass and stuff like that, but there was a torrential downpour on Friday. Like, it was a major rain, which made me even happier that we weren't there on Friday, because we'd been to Anime Next when it rains, and it's even more impossible to get through pathways with all the mud and water and puddles all over the place. But it was still a little bit damp and muddy on Saturday. You know, it hadn't quite dried off, even if it was a hot day. So we're doing our best to avoid mud puddles, working our way over to the DoubleTree. Once we got inside, we checked in at panel ops and got our badges, and that was absolutely hassle-free. And then we went to do our first panel at 1, which was American Comics for Manga Fans. You know what? I'll put in the show notes our presentation we did for this panel, because every year we do our best to change things up a little bit, put a little bit of humor in there, and actually make suggestions on some books that we feel fans of manga would appreciate in the American comic world. Because if you've been listening to the show long enough, you know that I'm a fan of both, and I'd like for fans of just manga to maybe understand that American comics are not just superheroes. And even the ones that are superheroes, if you're a fan of horror, you know, there's superhero comic books that are perfectly acceptable. Or if you're a fan of youths fighting, I'm sure you're probably going to enjoy Young Avengers. You know, that sort of stuff. And that's what we try to present in our panels. And we filled up the panel room nice and good. And then directly afterwards was our American Animation panel, which is exactly what the description entails. We showed a whole bunch of American Animation clips, showed a little bit of The Critic to start things off, and then went into the new Avengers cartoon, Avengers Assemble, which, quick review, it's all right. I mean, it's not anywhere near as enjoyable for me as Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes is, but these were the first two episodes. I didn't even really like the first two episodes of Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes that much, but it certainly grew on me over time. But the humor of Avengers Assembles is a lot closer to Ultimate Spider-Man than it is to Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and I think that's going to be a detriment for me because I really do not like Ultimate Spider-Man. It's way too cutesy. They went for a Family Guy cutaway style, and not my thing. At least there are no cutaways in Avengers Assemble, but it'll have to take some time. Also, the animation, even if the characters are detailed, it looks like it's Flash animated. I mean, there's not much motion going on, and they do these really weird, closer to widescreen. I forget the designation for widescreen of pictures, but it'll go from 16:9 to a rectangular position from there. I think it's, 176:1 or something like that, which is nice, but it's also a little jarring. And I feel the voice acting was a lot better in Earth's Mightiest Heroes 2, but again, it has time to grow on me. Whatever. We'll see how it goes. Also, put it in a clip from Superman Unbound, which I hate to put things down, but this was probably my second least liked animated movie that I've come out with since starting to put these out. The first worst would be Superman Doomsday, and this would be number two. And it's not that I don't like the character of Superman. It's just this one just, it felt like they had changed way too much from the original story. And they put in this stupid dynamic of having Lois Lane want to have kids and a family. And anybody who knows the character of Lois Lane knows that her job has always come first. I mean, sure, when she was married to Clark, she appreciated the marriage and everything. But I don't really see her as the type of woman who would immediately turn to Clark and start whining about that he's never there. Because she knows that Superman has a whole bunch of stuff to do in his life, but, you know, he does his best to make time for Lois as well, and they have their quiet moments, and they go on adventures together and everything. But this was more the damsel in distress Lois than I really like to see. And not exactly my cup of tea, but so be it. I put in a trailer for the Justice League Flashpoint Paradox, which, why couldn't they just call it Flashpoint, make life easy, but whatever, and a whole bunch of other things in there, and that went well. And gripe number four with Anime Next is that Anime Next is a convention that has already outgrown its space, but there really isn't anywhere else in New Jersey that they can go, because the New Jersey Convention Center, or Exhibit Center, or whatever they call it, the closest hotel to that is like a mile away. So it's not really convenient for an anime convention, because anime conventions like having a walking atmosphere where they can go from the hotel directly to the convention, and they'd have to run shuttles all the time, and it really wouldn't work out for them. So they're stuck where they are. And because of that, every single panel, it was like San Diego Comic-Con on a smaller scale lining up. Like, there were at least as many folks who did not get into panels as there were folks that got in, which is not good, because you're paying $50 for a weekend pass here. In fact, it might even be more than that. If you say line up to every single event and you get into maybe one out of the six, you're paying for nothing almost at that point. So I would feel really frustrated. But they work with what they can and they move on. I will say that the crowd at Anime Next is very nice and friendly for the most part. It's a younger crowd like most anime conventions, but that's the way that goes. I mean, you know, younger kids go to anime conventions and eventually they wind up at Comic Cons. So this is what we've talked about on episodes of the show before, and it certainly is still the case here. There's still some friends of mine that showed up, and I wound up having dinner with a couple of them on Sunday after, actually more like lunch on Sunday afternoon. I had my first Fat Cat sandwich over at Rutgers on that Saturday night. They put everything, including French fries, into these things. So, I mean, you want to talk about fattening, delicious sandwiches. That's what you're going to get at any of these. And they're like three or four trucks all in a parking lot area. And they're all trying to get, I mean, they're all owned by the same people, but they're all trying to get you to go to their cart or their truck. So they're all playing different types of music and heckling each other, and it's a whole lot of fun. And because it was off-season, because Rutgers, obviously, they're done with their semester at this point, there were only about five or six people there, and it was a nice way to relax after a long Saturday and then heading back to con afterwards. I don't know if I'm going to go back to Anime next year. We'll see. I do enjoy running panels, and I mean, I forgot to mention, the last panel that we ran that night was the Adult Swim Revolution panel, which, again, we had an even bigger panel room for this one. This was panel three, I think, and as many people did not get into the panel as I did get in. And because this was the 10th Adult Swim Revolution panel that we have run, well, my girlfriend Chris started it, and I've been doing it for about 7 years, but because this was the 10th one that we did a whole retrospective. Like, we played a whole bunch of clips from older Adult Swim shows as well as new ones, like everything from Mission Hill to Venture Brothers and everywhere in between, which was a lot of fun. But it's cramped. It's very, very cramped, and if they want to stay in New Jersey, they're going to have to figure something out because they've sort of ran out of space. I mean, I suggested on the forums, on their forums, to try Pier 36, which is where Wizard is having their convention, but I know that that's in a very expensive venue in comparison to what they're doing, and the hotels in the area are going to be a lot more expensive as well. But there were some positives to the convention. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it was all negative. One in particular, the tech staff, the AV staff, for panels was very helpful. I was able to get my computer to work right away with the projectors that we were working with for the panels, and setup went nice and smooth. All the panels that I were on, I was able to get in 5 minutes before the presentation was supposed to begin to set things up, and then the panel started on time. I know that there were some issues with other panels, but that did not happen with ours, so I'd like to very much thank the panelists who came before me for getting out of there where they were supposed to, because, well, there were no slowdowns and everything worked out great that way. Again, I said the folks that were at the panels were a very nice crowd, and the cosplay at Anime Next, I feel, has stepped it up a notch over the years. I mean, there was some devotion to some of the costumes that I saw, both anime and otherwise. I mean, there was a great Hawkeye that was walking around. There were a couple of Young Avengers, some Supernatural cosplay. I saw a freaking Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. If you search Tumblr for the Anime Next tag, you're going to find a bunch of great cosplay, and I'd recommend you do that because, yeah, I mean, it wasn't just folks in trench coats walking around, although there were also folks in trench coats, but they were probably cosplaying Supernatural, which I'll get into later. But yeah, I don't want to make it sound like it was all negative at Anime Next. It is a good convention. It's just a convention that's outgrown its space. It's as simple as that. And there's plenty of non-anime stuff to do. It's just, if you pre-reg, you're going to be on just about as long a line as if you get your tickets the day of, and get to a panel at least an hour beforehand if you want to get in. That's the only recommendation that I can make. So what else have I been up to? Well, I've been catching up on a whole lot of shows via Netflix and Hulu also, but mainly Netflix. So I've been doing my best to get through all of the shows that folks have been telling me to watch for the last 5, 6, 7 years. And I began that quest with Supernatural. Now, Supernatural is a show that's just got renewed for its 9th year. So season 8 just finished up about a month back, finished up at the end of May, which is a lot to get through. And yet, I chain-smoked that thing. Like, I started it, and I think I finished it within a month. Like, I just sat down and watched the seasons all the way through. And these are full, like, 22-episode seasons. This isn't like Breaking Bad, which I'll also be talking about, which is only 13 apiece. But I think the first season is short, and then everything else is long after that. Season 1 takes a little bit of getting used to, just because they hadn't really figured out the premise of the show, and it's very Monster of the Week. Similar to what Season 1 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer is, actually, now that I think about it. But once you get into Season 2, where Ben Edlund of Angel becomes executive producer and writes a bunch of episodes there, and then in the future, a bunch of humor gets injected into the show, and they know when to take themselves seriously and when to make fun of themselves. Sam and Dean become a lot more intricate characters, and there's a running plot through the entire show, and it just gets to be so intriguing and just outright fun after a while. When they introduce the Angels in, and Castiel becomes a member of the cast, it actually adds an extra layer to the show that I wasn't expecting, because, you know, dealing with demons, I guess it makes sense to bring in angels, but angels are often played too religious, if that makes sense. Like they don't really get their hands dirty, but these angels know how to get their hands dirty, especially Castiel, who becomes a very important member of the cast. And once Season 5 completed, the original show creator left, which can be worrying at times because, you know, you expect the show quality to go down after that. But Eric Kripke moved on. In fact, I believe he went on to create Revolution a couple of years later. The quality of the show, Season 6 was a little rough, but then after that, Season 7 and 8 really hit it for me. And I'm looking forward to Season 9 a hell of a lot. Like, I'm actually going to be sitting down. My Tuesdays are absolutely set. Like, at 8 o'clock, I'm going to be watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and at 9, Supernatural. Bam! That is my Tuesday this upcoming fall, and I'm looking forward to it a lot. It's all available on Netflix, except for the most recent season, but once fall comes around, they'll put that on there as well, and you can watch 8 straight seasons of Supernatural and hopefully catch yourself up in time. But I would give it a go. I mean, yes, it might take you a while if you don't have a job like I do, where you can, you know, sit on your keister and run through Netflix while you're doing your actual work. Do yourself a favor and give it a shot. If you're a fan of, I mean, I hate to say this literally, but Supernatural type shows where, you know, you got vampires and you got demons and you got angels and you got werewolves and shapeshifters and that sort of thing, then Supernatural might be your cup of tea. More standard shows, I watched all of Breaking Bad up to the second half of Season 5, which is yet to happen. That'll happen in August. Oh, that show is as good as people say it is. I mean, Bryan Cranston is now probably my second or third favorite actor, period. And he just does such a damn good job of building a character on this show. Walter White goes from being a beaten man to a kingpin in a matter of seasons. But he's still so flawed. And you can see that, because whenever he doesn't get his way, not only does he pout, but he would rather ruin the life of someone else in order to achieve greatness than compromise. That is exactly how Walter White is, and it just gets worse and worse as the series goes forward. His wife, Skyler, comes off as a giant bitch sometimes. You can see why, because, I mean, dealing with Walter as often as she has to, you know, sometimes you just come off that way. And, I mean, there comes a point in the series where her character shifts a little bit due to circumstances, which I don't want to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't seen the show. She becomes a more, I guess, accepting and accomplice character, but there's also points where that shifts. And, I mean, by the time you get to Season 5, I mean, their relationship is pretty broken in more ways than one. The premise of the show, for anybody who doesn't know, is that Walter White is a high school science teacher who finds out he has cancer. And rather than find out ways to assist himself the legal way, he decides to cook meth in order to pay for the cancer treatment and, you know, keep his family afloat. And the rest, as they say, is history. I mean, he does so with a former student of his, by the name of Jesse Pinkman, who starts off as the typical drug dealer who really is just looking for an easy way out of life, to a character that knows what he is doing and almost becomes as good a cook as Walter. But Walter still needs to control Jesse. At least he feels he has to. So he finds ways to manipulate and put him into, quote-unquote, his place whenever possible. It's, oh, man, I mean, like, I really don't even want to say that much about the show other than the fact that you should watch it. Just sit your ass down and watch it all the way through. Like, it, watch this before Supernatural. it's ending in August. The last few episodes, I believe it starts airing on August 11th or something along those lines. And it's totally worth the effort. Give yourself the pleasure of watching it. It's right up there with The Wire and The Shield. I've never watched The Shield or The Wire, mind you, but people say to me all the time, oh, these are the best shows, these are the best shows, the best shows, and Breaking Bad is one of those shows that they say as well, and they're absolutely right. Absolutely. The other show that I've been watching is Mad Men, which I'm now in season 3, and very slow build on Mad Men. You talk about Seinfeld as a show about nothing. Mad Men is a show about something, but it's not a confrontational show. I mean, it's sort of a little bit of a soap, but at the same time, you're almost like watching the life build of these characters from the beginning of the 60s and forward. Peggy is by far my favorite character on the show, and she goes from a, you know, lowly secretary to getting an office of her own at this ad agency. Don Draper is a character that you see his backstory open up, and you realize that he's, you know, A, not the man he says he is, and B, cheating on his wife left and right, and whether or not he even still loves the wife is uncertain to us, and why he would do things like this. But a lot of men back then pulled shit like this because they didn't truly respect the women in their lives. And I would like to think that times have changed in those aspects, and for the most part that would be true, but there are still, you know, the occasional jackasses out there. But the standout character other than Peggy on this show is Pete, who's played by Vincent Kartheiser, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, who actually was Connor on Angel, who you might remember as Angel's snot-nosed brat of a kid. And he's a snot-nosed brat of a kid in this as well, but he's starting his way. He just became a member of the ad agency, and he's doing his best to rise to power. And his wife, who's played by the same person who plays Annie on Community, Allison Brie, who's just about as sweet as Annie is, but she's a lot more submissive than Annie. She gets treated like dirt by Pete all the time, and she takes it because she's the wife, and she feels like she needs to be a devoted wife. But the build of this show, like I said, it's slow, but it's steady, and it's consistent, and it's consistently good, too. I mean, I can't say that I've watched a bad episode of the show. It's just, it's not the type of show that you should expect a cliffhanger on. Like, Breaking Bad is known for its cliffhangers. Supernatural has the occasional cliffhanger. Mad Men, you just let the experience take you. And I'm gonna be caught up on this before I know it, because I mean, I can't exactly chain smoke this show like I did with Supernatural, but I can certainly watch, say, 3 or 4 episodes in a day and feel satisfied. And you could probably do that too. I mean, even if you only watch an episode a day, I mean, you'll be caught up before you know it. But yeah, that's what I've been up to lately with that. Life-wise, I'm trying to iron out my plans for New York Comic Con. Unfortunately, I was rejected for a press pass. They actually have become a lot more strict on giving out their press passes, and I understand that because, I mean, New York Comic Con continues to get bigger every single year, and they can only give them out to so many people. So I'm trying to figure out whether or not I'm going to do a podcast arena table like usual or just go as an attendee, and I'll figure that out. I mean, either way, I'm still going to walk around with a recorder and occasionally get interviews and stuff like that. But all of that is up in the air. And of course, New York Comic Con is not till October anyway, so there's plenty of time to figure this out. The next convention that I'm going to be at is Otakon. And that's all booked up. I'm going to be staying with Adam and Comfort again, like we usually do. And I don't really record while I'm there, but since I've been doing these extra points, maybe I will this time around, and we'll figure something out. Yeah, that's in August, and I'll be doing that from Thursday until Sunday while the con's going on. And I just booked my Bolt Bus ticket back. Megabus there, I think I'm paying like $5 a ticket. Major advice to you people, if you know you're going to be taking a trip like way ahead of time, Megabus puts their entire schedule up like 6 months ahead of time. So you can get cheap Megabus tickets if you know exactly when you're looking to travel. And that's what I did with Otakon. That way I can pay $5 a ticket going there and then get the luxury of taking a Bolt Bus back, because Bolt Bus leaves from Baltimore Penn Station, Megabus leaves from Whitemore, so it's a little bit more of a trip. I'd much rather take a little more of a trip going into the city than going back home, because for this one, I just hop the light rail, and I'm at the bus, and then I'm back in New York before I know it. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Comic-wise, I am now on trade 15 of The Walking Dead. I mean, we're at a bit of a calm now, but what happened at the end of Volume 14, oof, that was rough. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything here, but major stuff happens to both Rick and Carl at the end of that. I mean, this is a little bit of a spoiler, so, I mean, anyone who is not reading Walking Dead, or at least has not caught up to that, then you can avert your ears for the next couple of minutes, but I'm not going to give everything away, but they're currently living in, or at least were in Volume 14, and I mean, I guess they still are in Volume 15. They're living in a community. Things are looking pretty content. And if there's one thing about Robert Kirkman, is that he does not let the characters of The Walking Dead stay content for very long. So you know that something is going to go horribly wrong, and a group charges the gates of this gated community that Rick and company have found themselves in, and it leads to a swarm of zombies coming onto the compound. Well, not exactly compound. It's more, you know, again, a community, because that's what it is. They're all living in houses, and they have occasional power, and they have plenty of food, and everyone seems to be nice and friendly, and you knew that eventually that was just all going to fall apart, and it pretty much does. What I will say is something happens at the end of Volume 14 that is game-changing both for the community and for Rick. And I'm now halfway through Volume 15, and what does happen gets a little bit resolved, but I'm wondering what exactly the ramifications for this are going to be. See, I hate having to stay within the lines of you know, not giving too much away here, but I really do not want to spoil what went on. I'm just saying it's still good. I mean, I know some people have written off Walking Dead at this point, but I'm enjoying it, and I just picked up also Volume 16 and 17 from the library. So I'm going to be past issue 100 within the next week. So I'll be just about caught up. I know Volume 18 comes out at the end of June, and hopefully my library will get that in by the time that happens. Looking forward to reading more of that. The other two books that I caught up on, I read the first six issues of Saga finally. Holy crap, is that good comics. Man, Brian K. Vaughan is knocking it out of the park, and it's such a sci-fi story, and it's so freaking fun. I mean, both art-wise and story-wise, I could read Saga as it comes out, and I came so close to just saying fuck it and buying the single issues, but since I've started with Saga as a story, I'm just going to keep buying it in trades. I have Volume 2 pre-ordered with DCBS, and it should be coming to me once it's released. The story of Alana and Marco and their kid is just so unique. That's what I'll put it. You know, it's absolutely unique. I mean, they're running from Prince Robot the Fourth and a bounty hunter called the Will, and the planet they're on, you're not quite sure whether it was once Earth or it wasn't. You know, they haven't made that clear, and I don't think they ever really will, but it's just so much fun. I don't need to talk about it that much. I just need to say, get your ass to the store and buy it, or get it off of Amazon, or get it from somewhere. Get it off Comixology. I don't care. Just read Saga. Do yourself a favor. One more Hawkeye Volume 1. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Matt Fraction and David Aja are one of my favorite combinations in comics right now. I mean, it's right up there with Mark Waid and Marcos Martin. The story that they absolutely work perfectly with each other. Whatever Matt Fraction is making the characters say, it just feels so natural with the art style of Aja. And those first four issues with Aja on art are stunning. They have a fill-in for issues 5 and 6, but and that's a good story too. It's just I cannot wait to see more Aja art, and I'm certainly going to be buying volume 2 of Hawkeye when it's released and continue reading it. It's a very street-level book, similar to the way that Iron Fist was when that Fraction was working on it, along with Aja. And the Russian gangsters that live in Hawkeye's part of Brooklyn, which is Bed-Stuy, which I'm somewhat familiar with. I haven't really been in it very often, but I know that it's one of those quote-unquote emerging neighborhoods in Brooklyn right now. Like, it's slowly being gentrified, but there's a lot of the old-school New Yorkers still living there, which, I mean, I freaking love old-school New Yorkers, but, you know, the hipsters need to find new cheap rents to work with, and they've worked past Williamsburg and are now getting themselves to Bed-Stuy, but whatever. Hawkeye lives in this building, and the owner of the building, who's this Russian tough guy, is looking to sell it and kick every single tenant of the building out. So what does Hawkeye do with his loads of money? He just goes ahead and buys the building and pays everyone's rent for free, because that's what Hawkeye can do. He's got all this Avengers money running around, so why not do something with it? But the gangster who says bro every 8 seconds, not too very happy about that. And him and his gang of thugs are going to be in it a lot more as the story moves forward. You've got Pizza Dog. I know, I think eventually the dog's name is Lucky, but he's affectionately known as Pizza Dog as a character in the book, which is a dog that Hawkeye saved from a car at one point during the story. And Kate Bishop from Young Avengers is in it as well. So you've got young Hawkeye in with old Hawkeye, and it's really I wouldn't quite say a Batman and Robin, more like a Batman and Nightwing type atmosphere between the two of them, where Kate is a master at shooting arrows. Like, Clint is absolutely in love with the way that she works, but not in love with her, because that would be creepy. And he makes that clear, even if Kate, you could tell, had a little bit of a crush on him at one point. I think that's sort of going out the window as time rolls by. But there's a later story, which is the fill-in arc, where Hawkeye needs to get this tape back, which supposedly shows him murdering a dictator, and Kate winds up involved with that as well, and everything. And Madame Mask is in it, and there's a whole bunch of villains bidding on the tape so that they can wind up getting the Avengers, to look negative in the eyes of the rest of the world. And it's so fun and worth picking up if you haven't. It's another one of those titles that I feel might get overlooked, but it's great to see Hawkeye in particular have a book that is in the top 10 after all these years. So, worth it. I'm running out of things to say, and these things are supposed to be somewhat short, so I'm just going to go ahead and end it here. Hope to have these out more often. We'll see about that. But at least I'm putting out one now, and there should be a full episode of Comic Timing coming within another few weeks as well, because I've got interviews in the can, which I might just release slowly, and I like talking to Brent, so it might just be me and Brent shooting shit about comics. Who freaking knows? There is a new BK's Bullets out as well, where Brent and Jim go ahead and talk about the Xbox One and PS4 announcement. So you'll find that on the feed directly below this episode when it is released. And of course, we are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over comicspodcast.com, and we're sponsored by DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service, over at dcbservice.com. Use the promo code CT8 if it's your first order. You'll get an additional 8% off on that order. And if you're looking to buy digital comics, do it from DCBS's storefront, and you'll get back even more money on your order that way. Thunder Agents, 50% off for $1.99. This month is a Valiant bundle for $11.97. Kiss Kids number one, that's weird, is out for 50% off. And Infinity number one starts off the big blockbuster at Marvel for 50% off at $2.49. It's Hickman's baby, and I've been loving his Avengers run, which I might talk about on the next episode of Extra Point or on Comic Timing. Who freaking knows? I haven't decided. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/comictiming and shoot us an iTunes review if you can. So, once again, as always, there's always time for comics. Point. I watched all of Breaking Bad. I watched all of Breaking Bad. I watched all of Breaking Bad.